Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we're here once more. We're live on Facebook currently, and you can also find us and all the sources, by the way, on turningtowards.life and on our Instagram page and on every podcast platform. You just search for Turning Towards Life. And if you're hearing this not on Facebook and you want to join the Facebook group so you can make comments and join in with the discussions, you can just search Turning Towards Life on Facebook and we will add you into the private group where you have to answer a couple of questions to verify that you're a human and that you're interested. And we'd love to have you in the Facebook group as well. So if you've been listening for a while, you might know, but I'll say for those who might just be beginning that we come each week and we gather together and we have this third thing in the mix of the conversation, which is a source. And of course, a source is always because of a person. And this week we've got a person in the midst of us who's written this piece that Justin, you found and discovered called The Great Gift of Selfhood. And Justin's going to introduce this to us in a moment. But the third for this week, the third person in the conversation is Ursula Le Guin. And we treat the source as that very third that turns this into a kind of triangulation of a conversation. So yes, we're fully here and in the conversation together as two people, but there's always a third something that we bring in as a gift and see what we can receive from it between us. So thank you, Justin, for bringing this as ever. Your sources are so diverse and rich and wonderful, and this looks like a wonderful one to be with today.
Thank you, Lizzie. And good morning, everybody. Good afternoon, good evening, whenever you're listening. I was just thinking about what you were saying about the third, Lizzie. And of course, this is a third space project that we're up to. And this seems to me, the more we do this, there's always a third. And the third is lots of things. The third is the source, and the third is the whatever is happening between you and me. And the third is what's between us and everyone else who's in this conversation. And I'm finding it so helpful to remember in everything that there's always a third something. Mm-hmm. Somehow it seems to blow apart the ordinary boundaries that I have about where something starts and ends. And also it's kind of right-sizing to remember that there's a third.
Mm.
Like I'm neither too small nor too big in it, and somehow in that way.
Mm.
So I'm glad for this third something and the third space and all of that. So this source, we've had some Ursula Le Guin before. Very often, Lizzie, we've brought her work in because she's the translator of the Tao, and we've had chapters of the Tao. But she was also an extraordinary novelist. And this source is a very short passage at a critical moment in one of her novels, The Farthest Shore, which is in the set of novels that I think are my favorite novels of all time, which are the Earthsea books. I think that's all there is to say about it. I mean, it's kind of self-explanatory in a way what it is. And I'm very glad for the question it takes up. So as usual, I'm going to read it and then you're going to read it and then we'll see where we go. The Great Gift of Selfhood. You will die. You will not live forever. Nor will any man nor anything. Nothing is immortal. But only to us is it given to know that we must die, and that is a great gift, the gift of selfhood. For we have only what we know we must lose, what we are willing to lose. That selfhood, which is our torment and our treasure and our humanity, does not endure. It changes, it is gone, a wave on the sea. Would you have the sea grow still and the tides cease to save one wave, to save yourself? Would you give up the craft of your hands and the passion of your heart and the light of sunrise and sunset to buy safety for yourself, safety forever?
The great gift of selfhood. You will die. You will not live forever, nor will any man, nor anything. Nothing is immortal. But only to us it is given to know that we must die. And that is a great gift, the gift of selfhood. For we have only what we know we must lose, what we are willing to lose. That selfhood, which is our torment and our treasure and our humanity, does not endure. It changes. It is gone, a wave on the sea. Would you have the sea grow still and the tide cease to save one wave, to save yourself? Would you give up the craft of your hands and the passion of your heart and the light of sunrise and sunset to buy safety for yourself, safety forever?
Thank you, Lizzie. I was thinking this morning, so on my way back home, I went swimming this morning, as you know, as I always do. Lizzie, and on my way back home, I think because of this, I was thinking about time and all the ways that I can easily get into and often have got into wanting to hold time still as if somehow that would liberate me from my fears. And in particular, I was thinking about how long I've known you. So I was working it out, and it's, I think I've actually known you for 12 years, and we've been doing Turning Towards Life for 4.5 of those. And I was remembering back to 12 years ago. And now I'm 51, so I must have been 39. And all at once I could feel how it's only because time goes the way that it does.
Mm-hmm.
That it was possible to be in a very important friendship and be up to things together that have really come to matter, both you and me and other people we know and care about. Getting up to big things and bringing things into the world, only because time unfolds that that's possible. And at the same time, all the parts in me that saw that it had already been 12 years and wanted to freeze it. And sometimes when I'm very, very afraid, the main thing I want to do is I want to stop things changing. And there's a part of me that's a very young part of me that I think really believes that if I could stop things from changing, everything would be okay. And then I come to Ursula Le Guin, and she says this amazing thing, which is the one thing that gives us our selfhood is our understanding that we have only that which we must lose. And that kind of turns everything inside out, because because it seems it there are two ways out of the pain of the loss of time. One way is to freeze time, which of course is impossible, but that's sort of this part of us that sometimes longs for that. And then she says, "But yeah, but that would mean freezing the sea to save a wave."
Mm.
But the other part of it is maybe if I just didn't know that things were passing, maybe if I didn't know, if I didn't understand that I would die and everyone I love will die and that everything I put my hands to will die and that everything is changing all the time, maybe I'd be freed from it also. And then Ursula Le Guin comes along and says, it's that you know that all of this is happening is what it is. That's the consequence of having selfhood, of being aware, being self-aware, being a person with an identity that endures over time, and being able to be in relationship with people I love is because I understand myself to be a person, and so I can see and feel all of that. So it's when I get really stuck I'm finding Ursula Le Guin's word, a liberation, because it reminds me that the very feeling of feeling stuck and feeling afraid is the one that comes with all the gifts. It's the inevitable consequence of all the gifts of being alive in the way that we get to be alive.
Yeah. My goodness, this is like kind of being thrown into a, I don't know, some existential mammoth question or something for me. And somehow the bit that's, well, firstly, I'm really moved hearing you talk about the length of our friendship and when we knew each other. And I know the exact moment that I spoke to you first and have an image of that in my mind of where you were, where I was. There's definitely some kind of, don't know, some moment, a significant moment in my timeline of life. And I was 29. And you were 39. And yeah, the whole of my 30s spent doing the things that we do and knowing you and all the rest of the lovely Third Space peoples is quite something. And also just feeling like I've given myself to something I am happy to have given myself to in that time. And it also kind of reverberates in a way where it's also all gone. You know, it's all happened. It's now, that is something, but it's not here anymore. It's happened. And so this, you know, we will not live forever and nothing is immortal. Feeling is like, it's like we really are a flow. I can feel us just being a flow, just the way that we stand by the shore and watch the ins and the outs of the waves and the non-stopness. We're the non-stopness. And so all of my efforts I can see to kind of hang on to one of those waves. Of course, it just carries on being a wave. It doesn't acquiesce to me. So whatever I try and fix or control or stop, it's like fingers holding sand. It's not going to turn into what I need it to turn into in that moment. So I'm feeling kind of met in the piece beyond that, which is, oh, I've tried and I've tried and I've tried and it hasn't worked. I haven't turned my life into a set of controlled circumstances where I know what's going to happen next, or I know who the hell I am or what's going on. And so then what? You know, when trying to fix things down and trying to make things predictable and trying to feel safe to this extent that Ursula Le Guin's asking about, it simply doesn't work. So then here we are facing into, we know we have to lose everything. Like letting that settle in, like letting it be true that I'm going to die. You know, I have to do so much work to go, that's true for me. It's not just for everyone else. It's true for me. Me, me, me. This is going to happen to me. And so I can feel it already just being in the conversation. It's so important because it has just the way that I look, the way that I try and make a decision, the way that I think shifts immediately to be in this, we only have what we know we must lose. That little bookshelf behind you with those little items that are important to you, they're goners. You know, the precious things I have on my desk here, all goners. All the things that I've tried to grasp and hold on to and capture. My desk is surrounded by photos of my family, and it's all at stake all the time, permanently. And so I feel very, one of my new words, preciousized. as in like everything becomes precious all of a sudden. And that flow and that movement and that everything's going to be different all the time feels much more present than far away when I'm in all of the denial of it all.
Such a big shift to know ourselves as the flow. I think it's so easy, and the trap is to think of ourselves and what's around us and those we love as things. And when we think of ourselves and other people as and what we own and what we love as things, of course what we want to do is, because something in us believes that they're frozen in time, it's so distressing for us to face that they will all dissolve, that everything will dissolve. But I don't think that we think of the waves in the sea that way. If you go to the sea and you see a beautiful, extraordinary wave come in, at least I don't, and my guess is it's just because the whole setup is so different. We don't cling to every individual wave and wish that that wave would stay on. It would be obvious that if we tried to make that wave stay, it wouldn't be a wave. It would be something else. You know, we're willing to let it keep on becoming the next thing. And also we see that the wave and the sea are intimately related to one another, but they're not the same thing. So the sea persists in a way that the waves come and go on the surface of it. And actually, as you were talking about my bookshelf, and you know, it has got things on it that really matter to me, books that matter and gifts from people, and in this room I'm sitting in, like yours, Lizzie, is filled with people I love and objects that matter. And if we were able to stand back and look at things on a bigger time scale, we'd actually see that everything was a wave. You'd see it. You'd see things coming and going. And if you could look at it on a big enough time scale, you'd see things that really looked like they never moved to us, like mountains. Just flow. Mountains are made by flow. Mm. It's just very, very, very slow compared to us, compared to the time scale of our lives. And there's something in the way that you're speaking about it, and that this source from Ursula Le Guin invites, which is to go, okay, if I could suspend my understanding that things are things and that I'm a thing for long enough, I might start to feel how I and everyone I love and everything I love is a wave in the flow or a part of the flow. And it would do two things, which I really with you. So in one way, it would make everything super precious, because I wouldn't be kidding myself that this was all here forever. And every moment of it would have the possibility of presenting itself as a moment of encounter with the flow that would never be the same. It'll just never be the same. You and I won't be the same in a minute and 5 minutes and 10 minutes and in a year. But the other thing, it would also simultaneously help us to let go of our bracing and our bracing against life. I often think that when I find myself bracing, I'm bracing against the flow. It's like if I contract myself hard enough, or I think hard enough, somehow I'll stop this. And you said it so beautifully. You talked about sand, and I was thinking about the sea. You know, if you're in the sea and you reach, you can't grab a wave and make it stop. Your hand passes through it, just like we pass through it. And I wonder if it seems to me that why Ursula Le Guin is so important, and she often writes about this, is that I think that many of us have not had the chance to even consider that we're flow, that we're process. We live in a thing-oriented culture which idolizes things. we make magnificent things, buildings, machines. So thinghood is like our model. And we don't have much time, much opportunity to study flow and to know ourselves as that. So we're comparing ourselves with the wrong kinds of beings, and that's a big, it's a big cause of our suffering.
Oh gosh, Justin, the word kind of that seemed to be here with me now is the way that everything seems to get reduced. You know, when I'm feeling into the realm of flow, I can sense and feel the complexity of everything. Everything is to do with the human is really complex. And I guess one reaction to that is just to reduce everything because it's too much. It's, we haven't been cultivating a body that can be with largeness and expansiveness and unknownness, and just hasn't happened. And so for it to all be that complex feels huge and overwhelming. And also the thing that rose for me when you were talking is sometimes I have this feeling like when it's a festival or something, or when I'm going to do something, like say, spend some time with some friends, I always have this thing of, well, what's the point in doing it? Because it's going to be over anyway. And so even before I'm there, I'm anticipating it being over. So why, maybe I just shouldn't go at all. This weird kind of existential thing. And of course I go, and then I feel the grief when it's over. And I'm like, I knew this was going to happen. I knew it was going to happen. Of course I did, because everything ends. But there's part of me that doesn't even want to begin because I know that it ends. And it's really strong. Even to the point of some, you know, we celebrate Christmas in our family. And sometimes I don't see the point in putting Christmas decorations up because I know I'm going to have to take them down again. And I think, and of course, then you put them up. But it's kind of linked to this thing. It comes from this perception of flow and time where if it doesn't endure, it's not worth it or something in my system. And so then if I don't do this preciousizing thing that we're doing here and learning, and I don't learn to appreciate that that is okay, that everything ends and that's the nature of things and the order of life. And if I don't do that, my life has the possibility of just not taking part in things at all because it's going to be over. So I can't handle the grief of it being over. So I'm just not going to even turn up. And so it's a very kind of tender dance I'm noticing now of like being willing every time to go through the grief and then getting more and more faithful that I can handle the grief of the overness or the doneness or the death of something. And also simultaneously, there's that fear of, well, if I get into this, I'm going to have to lose it. So I don't think I want to get into it. Thank you. I think I'm fine just like this, even when it's like my heart's longing to do something, it's so tender to have to let go and to grieve that maybe I should just save myself from that and not even do the thing that makes life beautiful.
Well, that's the same. It's the one that we've both been talking about, isn't it? Having the sea grow still and the tides cease. So we can save ourselves from torment and treasure in our humanity. That's what I see Lily Gwynn's inviting, and I so get it. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I feel the same. That in me that would push against life's flow in order to save me from it, as if that were possible. And the problem is, of course, it's not possible. So at some point, if we freeze ourselves, we'll end up grieving the end of our being able to freeze life. And we'll grieve all the things that we didn't bring ourselves to and surrender ourselves to, because we were too busy trying to make sure that Christmas didn't end. Or, and I was for me, one of the things that's been really helpful has been seeing that there's a way that that time itself is a kind of spiral. That's one of the gifts of Christmas or birthdays or anything that comes round, is we get to touch into them again and again and again and again, and they're always different, because now I'm 51 and I was 39 and I was 23 and I was 14 and I was, you know, which I, none of which I am now. Or I get to be 13 years into a friendship with you, Lizzie, and that's different from being first year. But somehow our touching back into those moments or the seasons keeps us both coming back and letting go, and coming back and letting go at the same time. So our flow isn't linear.
Mm.
It's like more like, you know, when you get whirlpools in the river or eddies in the current or something, that we're looping back. That's very helpful. But the other thing I did recently, you'll know some of this, but I started discovering parts of my family that I didn't know about recently, people in my family, and got introduced, although they are long gone, to two of my great grandparents, who I really didn't know anything about until very recently. And a few weeks ago, I got to listen to a recording of them. So I got to listen to a recording of them that was made in 1975 when I was already alive, but I didn't know them. And it was shortly before their own deaths. When I listened to the voice recording of my great-grandparents, I realized that at the time of their leaving, of course, there would have been great grief from those who loved them. But from the perspective of 50 or so years later, it seems like entirely the most glorious and most beautiful and most natural things that they lived, and they're no longer here, and I am. And had they lived, had that not have happened, I wouldn't be here, nor my own children. And had all the people who came before stayed alive, none of our lives would be possible. And so from the perspective of, even for people who are close in my own family, in a way, I can feel from this place that the rise and flow of the wave is the most ordinary thing, and it's the most necessary thing.
Yeah.
It's when we're close up in it that it seems unbearable, and it is unbearable. And at the same time, it's exactly what's called for, that we can bring, as Ursula Le Guin says, the craft of our hands and the passions of our hearts, and experience and be in the light of sunrise and sunset. It's all entirely necessary that that happens. So the feeling this dance, Lizzie, of feeling the unbearableness of the grief and the tenderness of it, and also choosing to bear it, choosing to be in it. Because from a big enough view, it's so obvious that it's what makes all of life the gift that it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really moving to think that all of us are really doing our very best to say yes in the knowledge that it's all flow. Because in the yes, there's a kind of, to say yes to anything is a completely tender something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything significant in our lives, to say yes to a relationship or yes to a job change or yes to an event, or yes to going somewhere. We don't know really what's going to happen at all. So I'm kind of moved by our general faith as human beings that in the saying yes to anything, it's an act of faith. And I really understand the parts of us and those of us who find it difficult to say yes to things, because it's terrifying. And just thinking about, so today there was something organized with some people who are in their 80s, and we invited them to do something and they said no. And we're really disappointed, because we know that it would be really meaningful for them if they did it, to go and see some flowers somewhere. And I can feel in this moment just how terrifying it all is. To say yes to these things is to open ourselves and to be in the unpredictable. And it's frightening, really frightening. And then those of us who do manage to say yes, it's an act of faith and courage and willingness in the face of it's all gonna go. I kind of feel like I'm really admiring the humans, what it is to be human.
Yeah. What a place for us to end. Lizzie, with our feeling into the, I'm feeling very grateful for our human capacity to say yes, even though we know that the result of all of our yeses will dissolve.
Yeah.
And that everything we say yes to in the end will make way for something else that is being said yes to that won't be ours, not directly, and it won't be us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great act of, it's love. It's a great act of love to keep participating, to keep being in life.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling very grateful that you and I get to do that in this way every week. And to everyone who's with us, and I want to say to you, Lizzie, thank you so much. And to all of you who join us, thank you so much. And please feel very welcome to share this with other people who you care about, who you think might benefit from being in this conversation. And just to part by saying to everyone, you can talk to us too. So you can email us, hello@turningtowards.life. You can join. We've got an email thing that we do where these come out, which you can get to on the turningtowards.life website. You can join the Facebook group and talk with us there. It would be lovely to be in conversation. And all being well, we will do this again. Same time, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. UK time next week, and in all the other podcast places. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.